I'm Alex Grant, and this is the Law of the Case podcast for April 1st, 2024. President Trump's lawyers filed a motion last month alleging violations of his constitutional rights in the New York hush money case, specifically the withholding of relevant documents for his defense. In lawyer speak, the motion was about discovery. Discovery being the process that the prosecution turns over documents and evidence that the defendant is entitled to, and that includes exculpatory evidence that would impeach witnesses the government is going to call at trial. President Trump and his lawyers have been asking for the case to be dismissed for what they call discovery violations, and at a minimum, they asked for a continuance, or what they call in New York State court, an adjournment of the trial. That continuance was granted with the prosecution's assent. The trial was supposed to be on March 25th. Now it is set for April 15th. In this episode, I talk about this discovery motion, the arguments on both sides, the legal standard, who's right and who's wrong. But what is even more interesting to me is what the discovery motion and the district attorney's response reveal about the preparation of the case by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. I'm Alex Grant with the Law of the Case podcast, and I spent 23 years in the Department of Justice prosecuting nearly every type of criminal case the department handles, and I am currently an adjunct faculty member with the Western New England University School of Law. I am here to give you the straight scoop on the law, and I am unafraid to tell you when the emperor has no clothes. This podcast will cover the legal issues that journalists miss because they have never stood up in a courtroom, and I explain the law without carrying the water for either political party. So what does this last-minute disclosure of this impeachment evidence, and specifically evidence about their star witness, Michael Cohen, say about the Manhattan District Attorney's preparation of this case against President Trump? It's this question that I think is being totally missed by traditional media sources who have reported on this very important motion and the judge's ruling on it. Predictably enough, journalists and commentators on one side of the political spectrum have castigated Trump for filing a frivolous motion and for simply trying to delay the trial. On the other side, Trump and his allies are claiming that the Manhattan District Attorney's Office has engaged in prosecutorial misconduct and that their behavior has been outrageous and that the case should be dismissed. So the question of what the obligation was of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office to turn over the disputed evidence, that's the first layer of this issue. What hasn't been discussed was the fact that the Manhattan District Attorney's Office apparently has gone forward with this case without all the information about its star witness, Michael Cohen. This is information that Trump and his lawyers definitely want. That's understandable because they want to impeach Michael Cohen. They want to get any kind of dirt on him that they can. Totally understandable. Just part of the criminal defense lawyer playbook. But what about the Manhattan District Attorney's Office? Wouldn't they want to know all the information, all the dirt, all the evidence that would impeach or call into question the credibility of such an important witness? That's the part that's interesting to me about this motion. That's the part that tells me something about how this prosecution has been managed. Because let me tell you something. When I was a criminal prosecutor with the U.S. Attorney's Office, with the U.S. Department of Justice, that would have scared me to death, the idea that there would be information out there in the possession of third parties that would hurt my case that I didn't know about. Now, let me just say something to begin with about the motion. The relief that Trump is looking for outright dismissal of the case. That's extreme. Under the most generous reading of the motion, the district attorney's office could have taken additional steps to get this information from the Southern District of New York, the local federal prosecutor's office. But the DA's office clearly did not have this information and clearly was not intentionally withholding it from President Trump. And it was clear that the DA's office gave Trump enough information to allow him to seek the documents from the federal prosecutors. It would be that kind of willful withholding of evidence that might just warrant dismissing the case. And it looks like that simply did not happen here. Now, it's not surprising that Trump's criminal defense lawyers are asking for this extreme relief. Criminal defense lawyers don't have to take reasonable positions. They don't have to take positions that are well established by the law. They can seek sanctions that are disproportionate to any kind of mistake by the prosecution. Why is that? Their job is to be zealous advocates for their client. The prosecution, on the other hand, has a duty to be the adult in the room, to take reasonable positions, to take positions that are well-grounded in existing case law, and frankly, to bend over backwards to protect the rights of the defendant. The prosecutors are not pure advocates in the courtroom the way Trump's lawyers are. So what Trump's lawyers were doing in seeking this extreme sanction is not unlike what criminal defense lawyers do in all manner of prosecutions. It's part of a general strategy of putting the government on trial. Or as I like to say when I was at the U.S. Attorney's Office, the defendant's lawyers are doing a good job when we're talking about things other than the guilt or innocence of the defendant on the charges in the indictment. So if you're talking about discovery, if you're talking about, in the case of Fannie Willis, relationships outside the office, that's all good for the defense. What's bad for the defense is talking about the guilt or innocence of the client. So we got that part out of the way. Yes, Trump was taking an extreme and unjustified position. The fact that he was seeking in the same motion a continuance, that tells you that they understood that this extreme sanction was unlikely to be granted. And in situations like this, judges are really going to be focused on making sure that the defense has the evidence, has the information it needs to put up a zealous defense, and to make adjustments in the trial schedule to allow them to do that. But let's get to the merits of what they were arguing, and specifically, what was the obligation of the district attorney's office to obtain these materials that were clearly within the custody of the federal prosecutors? Well, both the district attorney's office and President Trump agree that the district attorney's office has to produce information that is in its actual or constructive possession. So actual possession, that means you have physical control of something. It's in your pocket, it's in your office, it's in your filing cabinet. Constructive possession means that you don't have physical control of the documents, but you have the ability to get physical control of the documents. So that definitely includes documents that are in the custody of the police who investigated the case. The district attorney's office is presumed to be able to get physical control of documents that are in the custody of the police and to turn them over to the defense. Now, where they part ways, Trump's team says that the district attorney's obligation goes beyond that, that there is some duty to inquire, some duty to seek out documents and information that are beyond the prosecutor's immediate grasp. And Trump's lawyers cite some cases for that proposition. Now, this is where it gets squishy, because this was something I sometimes encountered as a federal prosecutor. The defense lawyer, and sometimes even the judges, would expect or demand that I obtain documents that were in the custody of state prosecutors or state police officers or even foreign law enforcement agencies. And to state the obvious, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office does not have the authority to walk into the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York and start carrying out documents against their will. So something has to happen. Either permission from the federal prosecutors or compulsory process to get those documents out of the federal prosecutor's hands and into the custody of the district attorney's office, and then share them with the defense. And what do I mean by compulsory process? Well, that means a subpoena or a court order. In other words, the party in the litigation is invoking the authority of the court to order the production of the documents. That's what a subpoena or court order does. And one of the things that I used to argue is that if it takes compulsory process to obtain the documents from a third party, then clearly the documents are not within the prosecutor's custody or control, because I'm having to use the authority of the court, which goes beyond my authority as the prosecutor, to obtain the documents. Preet Bharara and Joyce Vance, two former United States attorneys in the Obama administration, talked about this issue on their podcast. They were quite convinced that the district attorney's office had done nothing wrong.
Now, there's an argument to be made that Alvin Bragg and his team satisfied their obligation by making a request for the documents when the Southern District, given its own discretion, provided a subset. They were okay to assume that that's all that was going to be forthcoming. They gave that to the defense, and that's that, because the obligation on the part of any prosecutor's office is to provide information that is in the possession of anyone who is part of the prosecution team, right? Isn't there not an argument that the Southern District of New York was not part of this prosecution team, and it was not necessarily the obligation of Alvin Bragg to get this material?
But let's go into this in a little more depth. Where discovery obligations get kind of sticky is when you have multiple law enforcement agencies or multiple prosecutors' offices working together. So you might have a federal law enforcement agency like the FBI, a state police agency, a local city police department, a district attorney's office, a U.S. attorney's office, all of these agencies working together. And in that situation, materials that are in the custody of a federal prosecutor's office might be deemed to be within the constructive possession of the district attorney's office, or vice versa. I've encountered that as a federal criminal prosecutor, where the judge deems that the federal prosecutor has constructive possession of materials that are in state law enforcement or local law enforcement's hands. You have this situation here where the federal prosecutors, the Southern District of New York, they were prosecuting Michael Cohen. They were looking into possibly charging the president, but they didn't. And then some time goes by, and then the Manhattan District Attorney's Office decides to prosecute President Trump. You could see how those offices could be working together, and that would not be unusual, and there wouldn't be anything improper about it in and of itself. However, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and I think this gives a lot of insight into how the case against President Trump came to be, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is careful to say that they were not working on a joint investigation with the Southern District of New York. They make it very clear that the two prosecutors' offices, the federal and the state, hey, we're acting separately. We're acting independently. So that's important to their argument that they don't have any discovery obligation for the materials that are in the hands of the Southern District of New York, or in the hands of the FBI or some other federal law enforcement agency that was involved in the investigation of Cohen or other people involved in this hush money scheme. The district attorney's office, in their response to the motion filed by Trump's lawyer, then goes into some detail about their process of investigating the case, of impaneling a grand jury and obtaining certain documents from the Southern District of New York. From their filing, you get a glimpse into the investigation and some of the decision-making process. The DA's office gives a factual recitation that begins in 2018 when Michael Cohen pleads guilty to federal crimes in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. It says that based on the facts admitted in the plea allocution, meaning what Cohen said in court about his crimes, and based on public reporting, the district attorney's office opened its initial inquiry. The filing then says that the DA's office paused its inquiry to avoid interfering with the federal investigation into the same conduct. And then, again, I'm just going through their filing right now. It says that it paused its investigation, quote, until learning from public reports in or around the middle of July 2019 that the federal government had concluded its investigation, end quote. So you need to read between the lines a little bit. When the DA's office refers to the federal government concluding its investigation, that means they learned that the federal prosecutors were not going to charge President Trump. The U.S. Attorney's Office had charged Cohen. They charged Cohen with entering into a conspiracy with a certain person, and that person was clearly President Trump, to disguise payments to Stormy Daniels. But they were not going to charge President Trump, the person Cohen was working for. So at that point, it's in the lap of the DA's office, this decision of whether to prosecute President Trump for this hush money scheme because the federal prosecutors had passed on it. So the next sentence in their filing says, quote, in or around late October 2022, the office began taking steps to impanel a grand jury into a number of things, but most importantly, into President Trump. Let's pause there for a minute. And this is the part that fascinates me. For over 3 years, in the DA's office telling of the story, nothing happened. The DA's office doesn't say what decisions it made or didn't make or how it felt about the case during that time. But again, you can read between the lines. The DA's office knew in 2018 that Cohen had pled guilty to conspiring with Trump to disguise payments to Stormy Daniels. In 2019, the DA's office knows that the federal prosecutors are not going to charge Trump. And for over 3.5 years, nothing happens with their investigation. I think you can conclude pretty reasonably, and I believe this is the subject of some public reporting as well, that the former district attorney who headed up the Manhattan DA's office was not interested in pursuing the case against Trump. So what changes? Well, the election of Alvin Bragg. He takes office in January of 2022, and according to their filing, by October 2022, they're impaneling a grand jury to look into this hush money scheme, that took place in 2016. So they're already 6 years behind the events, but they're really just starting their investigation in earnest. They're explaining this because they're trying to explain why they produced the documents when they did. In other words, how they came to get the documents from the federal prosecutors and the timing of that. In their filing, the district attorney's office says that they presented evidence to the grand jury between January 2023 and March 2023, and that during this period of time, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office contacts the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, quote, to request access to evidence in the federal government's possession that had been developed in the course of the USAO's investigation and prosecution of the campaign finance counts in United States versus Cohen. End quote. I'm bringing this up to explain the timeline. The timeline is important here because so much of the story of prosecuting Donald Trump is about timing. There is clearly an interest, clearly an agenda to try the case against Trump in advance of November 2024. So the Manhattan District Attorney's Office gets the indictment against Trump in March 2023 after presenting its evidence to the grand jury. And during this time of January to March 2023 is when the DA's office approaches the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York to try to get information that the federal prosecutors had. And there are three buckets of information that seem especially relevant and important. First, there's the data from Michael Cohen's cell phones that the U.S. Attorney's Office had obtained through a search warrant. The second bucket of information is bank records. And then a third bucket is witness interviews, including write-ups and recordings of FBI interviews with Cohen. And how does the DA's office try to get this information? It's basically asking for permission. In its filing, the DA's office says that it prepared a petition for the U.S. Attorney's Office to present to the federal court judge to allow the federal prosecutors to disclose certain grand jury material that had been presented to the federal grand jury several years earlier. Now, generally speaking, the U.S. Attorney's Office is precluded from disclosing grand jury material without a court order. So the DA's office proactively says, here, we'll prepare the petition for you. We'll make it real easy for you. Here it is. Just sign your name to it, present it to the court, and the court will allow you to provide the documents and materials that we want. So the U.S. Attorney's Office basically does that. But, and this is the rub right here, the U.S. Attorney's Office declines to produce all the information the DA's office wants. It declined to produce the data from Michael Cohen's cell phone. It does not provide all of the witness interviews. It does not provide all of the bank records. So that's what Preet Bharara was talking about in that clip that I played for you earlier in the show. The U.S. Attorney's Office decides to produce some, but not all, of the documents. And the DA's office, in Preet's view, reasonably concludes that that's all that will be forthcoming. And that is the DA's office's basic argument here. Look, we tried. We asked for this information. It was produced to us in the first 3 months of 2023. And then in May of 2023, when their discovery obligations have kicked in, they produced the information that they did have in their possession, the information that they had gotten from the federal prosecutors. And the DA's office says, well, at that point, it's on Trump. If Trump wants more information from the U.S. Attorney's Office, well, it's clear what has been provided and what has not been provided. And it's his hunt now. Of course, Donald Trump disagrees with that legal position. The defense says that it was incumbent upon Alvin Bragg to try harder. It's clear that the DA's office had some sway with this approach of asking for permission from the U.S. Attorney's Office. It got some of the materials. The defense says that that indicates that there is some kind of cooperative arrangement between the two offices. Now, ultimately, the trial judge, disagrees with this argument. The judge says that the DA's office has done everything it has been required to do. It has produced what it has. Trump was entitled to seek more. He did seek more. He's getting more. And he's even getting a continuance to review the additional materials that he's getting from the U.S. Attorney's Office. And the judge was quite sympathetic to the DA's office position. So in that sense, it's a win for the DA's office. It's also a win for the DA's office in that the trial is only delayed by a few weeks, not the 90 days that Trump was asking for. Okay, so that's where we are. That's the merits of the motion. That's the judge's ruling. That's the timeline that we're on. So we have an April 15th trial date. But go back to the timeline of the production of this evidence. What the DA's office is saying is that within a year, or a little over a year, of Alvin Bragg coming into office, they go from considering the case against Trump to impaneling a grand jury to presenting the grand jury evidence to asking for information from the U.S. Attorney's Office to an indictment in March 2023. And it did so knowing that it did not have all of the information about Michael Cohen, their star witness, including potential impeachment evidence. That's the part I find kind of curious, and not the sort of thing I would want to do, or most careful criminal prosecutors would want to do. Before I even charge a criminal case, I would want to know all about that impeachment information. And I would especially want to know it in a case like this, because that information was in the hands of the Southern District of New York U.S. Attorney's Office, the local federal prosecutors who had declined to prosecute President Trump for this hush money scheme. If I was the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, that decision by the federal prosecutors to pass on prosecuting somebody in a case of this magnitude, well, I would want to know everything. I would want to know every wart, every blemish, everything that is negative about a case that I would be bringing against the defendant, let alone a defendant like President Trump. This motion and the district attorney's response to it make it clear that they did not have all that information. To their credit, it appears that they did try to get that information from the Southern District of New York. But what appears to have happened is that Alvin Bragg asked for the information about Michael Cohen, about this hush money scheme. They got some of it. They got some information. And then they turned it over to President Trump. All very proper. But it was pretty apparent that there was additional information that the Southern District of New York did not want to turn over for whatever reason. So the Manhattan District Attorney's Office accepted that as a reality. They figured, well, we've done everything we can do. We will turn over the information we have. And if President Trump and his lawyers want to go get this additional information from the Southern District of New York, well, they can do it. That is what has happened in this case. President Trump did make a request. They issued a subpoena to the Southern District of New York, a substantial amount of documents in the form of bank records, emails, and other documents from the phone of Michael Cohen have been turned over. You might ask, what else could the Manhattan District Attorney's Office have done? Well, it goes back to what I said before. There are two ways to get the information from the Southern District of New York: by permission or by compulsory process. The Manhattan DA's office could have done what Trump did, which was to issue a subpoena for that information. And had it done so before it had obtained the indictment, it could have used a grand jury subpoena. Of course, the U.S. Attorney's Office could have resisted the subpoena. It could have gone to court to quash the subpoena. It could have made arguments for why the material could not be compelled by a state court judge to a federal prosecutor. The U.S. Attorney's Office could have made those arguments. And that litigation could have gotten involved and it could have taken some time. However, that's the kind of careful job that I think most criminal prosecutors would want to do before indicting the case. Why indict the case and wait for the other shoe to drop? Wait for the defense to find out the damaging information about your star witness? That's a very unsettling feeling. So why didn't they use compulsory process before getting the indictment? I think the answer, and again, it requires reading between the lines a little bit, is in the timeline. Now, if you zoom out, the DA's office had all the time in the world to prepare this case for indictment. It had years to do so. But because of its own internal deliberations, because of the change in decision makers in the DA's office, once you get to that first quarter of 2023, when the DA's office is presenting the case to the grand jury and is asking the U.S. Attorney's Office for its information for the first time, the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking because there's this desire to have the case tried before November 2024. And here's the other ticking clock problem, the statute of limitations. So normally the statute of limitations in New York for these crimes would be 5 years. The indictment was not brought until March 2023. The main events took place in 2016. It's been reported that the DA's office is relying upon some New York state executive orders issued during the COVID crisis that suspended the statute of limitations. And maybe the DA's office will be proven right that those executive orders do give it some relief. But even with the orders, the DA's office certainly had to be mindful that it was running up against the statute of limitations. So you have two things pushing them forward without the full story of Michael Cohen: the desire to try the case before November 2024 and the statute of limitations. Now, we'll see what Trump gets from the Southern District of New York in terms of impeachment of Michael Cohen. We'll see what was on Michael Cohen's cell phone, the prior statements made by Michael Cohen to see if there are any inconsistencies. We'll see how much that matters. The fact is that there's already a great deal of impeachment material for Michael Cohen. I'm sure the DA's office understands that completely. Michael Cohen has testified before Congress. He has been giving numerous TV interviews. He's actually been a producer for a 30-episode TV series called Mea Culpa with Michael Cohen. And he has written 2 books. All of this provides material for cross-examination for Trump's lawyers. This is pretty much the exact opposite of what you would want your witness to be doing. And it's been publicly reported that the U.S. Attorney's Office passed on the Trump prosecution mainly because of concerns about Michael Cohen's credibility. In other words, how badly he would be impeached on the stand. So if you were the DA's office, wouldn't you want to know at least as much as the U.S. Attorney's Office about Cohen before you brought a case that has so much riding on Cohen's testimony? It almost seems reckless to go full steam ahead on prosecution knowing that there are landmines waiting to go off. So, to be continued, it looks like we will get a trial in April. The late disclosure of these materials did not give Trump the basis for dismissing the case that he wanted. The late disclosure only got him a 3-week delay. But those are the decisions of the trial judge. Those decisions will be things that Trump can appeal if he's convicted. But my conclusion on this little subchapter is that the DA's office departed from the best practice of learning all the relevant information on their key witness. I'm sure if time were not a factor, they would have pursued a different course. But time was not on their side, and we'll see if that ends up hurting them. Until next time, I'm Alex Grant with the Law of the Case podcast. You can find us on YouTube, on Facebook, Twitter, on most podcast apps, and you can email the show at lawofthecase@gmail.com.